this week on the Inside Flap.
The other day, my kid wanted seltzer from McDonald's. I'm like, I don't even know if they sell seltzer. And she goes, it's a special like, off the menu thing. You just have to know to ask for
one of those.
And then we drive through and I'm like, could we have one seltzer? And then I go, and a cheeseburger, because I felt so bad for like not ordering more. And then she goes, Mom, it's McDonald's. You don't have to feel bad. But I used to keep a journal, but I had to stop because this is what how my journal went every day. I'm freaking out. I'm really freaking out. Today, I am totally freaking out. I was like, oh my God, you cannot, for 50 years, you cannot write that same thing every single day. It was like, you know, it's like, it was just like a panic book.
And then I started talking about, yeah, I like that Taylor Swift.
Oh, no.
I got posters up on the walls in my trailer. I like to look at those posters later. And the kids, you know, they were laughing. And then all of a sudden they stopped laughing. And I hear like coughing going on and kids like looking, like jerking their head towards the door. I turn around and look and there's this guy just standing there.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Book Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated to my left on the couch is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And on the other side of the country is Andrew Dow.
Excelsior.
Welcome to the show. This is episode 182. Of the Inside Flap, and we have a great guest for you today. I'm really excited to welcome to the show A.M. Holmes. We had a great conversation with her. We'll have that for you in a second. The fantastic A.M. Holmes. Now, she is the author of one of my favorite. Now, there's nothing more exciting than to tell an author that they are the writer of one of your favorite books of all time. That was Music for Torching. Her books also include The Safety of Objects and This Book Will Save Your Life, which won the 2013 Orange Women's Prize for Fiction. She's also done some TV work, including serving as co-executive producer and writer on Mr. Mercedes, and was a writer-producer of the Showtime series The L Word. She was a fantastic guest. You're going to really want to stick around and hear her talk all about penis nuts. Yeah, you'll just have to stick around to find out what that's all about. She's got a great new book out now. It is called The Unfolding, and we will have that chat for you in just a bit. But first, listen, this was really exciting. After a couple years of COVID, we finally got to have a regular old, at my school anyway, back to school night for parents. Now, this is one of those deals where the parents follow their students' schedules around.
Did we not have it last year?
Did not. Not at East, no.
We had it at Littleton.
I think
though.
We had it at Littleton. Yeah. We did not have it at East.
Huh.
So we, as the teachers, prepare a brief 10-minute talk for the parents, and they go, you know, they go around to each one of their kids' classes and listen to the little 10-minute spiels that all the teachers do for them. Now, what I like to do is I welcome them in, and no, I did not do it like I did with the students. I did not give them the Borat voice. I did not think that would be prudent to do that. I did start them out with a little slideshow. And the first, you know, they walk in, the first slideshow just says theater arts on it. And what I say is, I say, listen, we're going to talk all about the class in a second. But first, I'd like to tell you a little bit about my my favorite subject. And then I go to the next slide, which is a big picture of me with a big cheesy smile holding up a key lime pie. And I say, yes, my favorite subject, me.
That's funny.
And, you know, that always gets a chuckle from most parents. Some parents, you know, kind of glance askance at me. And that's okay, because if they don't start laughing, what I like to do is I'll just go, ha, 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 ha. That's okay. I'll laugh for you.
Oh, dear. Oh.
I think is an old Rodney Dangerfield
that's
bit.
Yeah.
I think so. Huh. But listen, it was a very exciting back-to-school night for me, as one of my students is the daughter of Denver Public Librarian and frequent guest of the show, Amy Del Po.
That's right.
So, yeah, so they were there, Amy and Paul. It was great. It was great to see them, and I embarrassed them in front of the entire class. Because I do, I mean, you got an audience of potential listeners in the classroom. I'm going to plug the podcast. So I do that. I also plug, Laura, your website.
I appreciate that, Dave. There. A lot of wealthy parents at East. I'll take it.
LauraMedicusInteriors.com. Yeah, a lot of wealthy parents. And I always say, and now for the, this is my wife's website. She's the successful one in the family. And then some of them laugh. And again, some of them don't. And then I put a big old picture of Andrew, our alma mater, Queen Anne's County High School. Mm. I put a big picture of that. And then I tell them that I was a class clown and how it's prepared me for my current position. And again, some laugh.
I don't know if I would laugh at that one.
And some don't. And then what I did is I had a picture of the cat, Honey the cat. And I say, and this is Honey the demon cat. And, you know, the parents and also the kids were always like, yeah, you can kind of see it in them. You can see the demon in them. And then I say, yeah, matter of fact, unrelated note, is anybody out there looking for a cat? And then they chuckle. And then this one class while I was doing it for, this little kid, really cute little kid.
Oh, no.
Little brother, little 5 or 6 year old boy. He raises his hand. And he goes, yeah, I want a cat. And then without missing a beat, his dad, who was sitting all the way on the other side of the room, he goes, does anybody want a kid? it was hilarious.
That's cute.
I did not tell the parents about what happened the week prior in class, which was we were doing a little improv called bus stop, where one person is waiting for a bus and it's the other person's job to kind of get them off the bus stop and get them to leave. So I got on the bus stop and I was doing a kind of character like this, kind of like a Sling Blade motivated character. And then I started talking about, yeah, I like that Taylor Swift. I got posters up on the walls in my trailer. I like to look at those posters later. And the kids, you know, they were laughing. And then all of a sudden they stopped laughing. And I hear like coughing going on and kids like looking, like jerking their head towards the door. I turn around and look, and there's this guy just standing there, an adult. I don't know who he is. It's a huge school. I don't know any of these people. I have no idea who they are. But I immediately drop the accent. I'm like, hey, how you doing? Can I help you? And he's like, yeah, I need to speak with this student. I'm like, okay. And then he grabs a kid and leaves, and I yelled in my class. I'm like, why didn't you tell me? They're like, we did. We didn't have, we tried to. We didn't really have an opportunity to
that's so embarrassing.
Do anything. But yeah, I did not do that voice for the parents. But anyway, that's what's going on with me. Laura, how has your week been?
Yeah, so I thought we could talk about our back-to-school night, Dave.
Right, where I got to be on the other end of the firing line, and I got to be the parent, which I always like to make sure that the teacher knows that I'm a teacher somehow. I always try to work that in.
That's true. Dave will work that in, Andrew, to every conversation with every teacher there. Yes. But you left early on me because you were in so much pain that night.
Yeah, that was when I had
to rotate through the classes by myself.
When I had gnawed through my cheek, much like a hamster or a squirrel, and yes, was in so much pain I had to leave.
But I had an observation from back to school night.
Oh, okay, great.
So I'm wandering through the classes and I'm upstairs and I have to get, I don't know, it seems like her classes are strategically located to give her the maximum number of steps in the day. So I'm on the second floor.
It's a sprawling campus.
But I have to get, you know, it doesn't look very big from the outside, but it's quite big.
Yeah.
On the inside.
It's only two floors, but it, like, you know, there's,
I don't know, it's weird.
A couple thousand kids who go there, so it's sprawling.
Yeah. So I'm on the second floor and I'm trying to get down to the first, but I know the first after that I have to get like across, and I'm behind these parents that I had been stuck behind before in another class, and they're the shufflers. They kind of back and forth, left foot, right foot, weight on the left foot, weight on the right foot, kind of shuffled, and they're slumped over and their mouths are open, and I feel so annoyed. But then I look around at everyone else around us in the hall, and we are all middle-aged folks slumped over, shuffling, mouths open. We look, collectively, we look like hell. Like, we look terrible. And I was thinking, like, our age group, a lot, you know, some people have older parents that they're taking care of. They still have kids at home that they're taking care of. They've got jobs. You're in the prime of your job, probably the busiest your job's ever has been. Mm-hmm. We're exhausted. And so I think a group of retirees, if they had to do back to school night, would have much more pep and vigor than a group of late 40s, early 50s year olds.
Right, because it is getting, you know, by the time it was over, it was almost 9 o'clock at night.
I left the school at 9:15.
Yeah, that's too late for a back-to-school night.
Yeah, and we were slumping our way through the hallway, and then I just kind of looked around. I was like, man, we look terrible.
Well, because you guys were hearing the same old boring speeches. You didn't have any, there was no drama teacher to tell you they were the class clown.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know if we, though, as a group could have, like, raised our energy level to meet yours, Dave. That
I don't know. My parents were with me. They were laughing. Oh, they were involved. Good. I heard several parents say as they were leaving, man, I want to take his class.
Oh, that's always something you want to hear. That's for sure. Yeah. That's for sure. And then I was also laughing because at the very beginning, so Sylvia is in the jazz band and the jazz band plays before the principal speaks. And so it was really fun. She did a solo. It was great to hear.
Yep.
But then the principal comes out and there is a spotlight on the stage, Andrew. There's a spotlight. Does the principal stand in the spotlight or does she stand in the dark? She stands in the dark.
Of course.
Yeah. Right.
And I wanted to scream as a theater teacher. It's all I could do not to scream out, find your light! Find your light!
She'd like shift over a little bit and like part of her head would hit the light.
You
should like
feel it on your face. It's a warm
light. I know.
Light.
And like a vampire quality. She'd like shivvy away like really quick.
Yeah, she would like slink into the shadows and then she'd pop, like half her face would get in there. Yeah. And she'd go back and forth the whole time.
Thinking,
it was so
though,
frustrating.
The thing is, it is frustrating because I know if I was in charge of a school, which no one would ever let me or want me, nor should they, I think, unfortunately for everyone around me, it would go to my head. And if there was a spotlight, I would stand in it.
And the light would go to your head.
Yeah,
too,
it would all go to my head. I would stand in that spotlight. I would find that spotlight. I would not leave it.
Well, if
I left it, I'd have a kid tailing me on the stage with a spotlight.
This is why we all need to take a theater class. And like I told my parents, I said, this is the most important class your kid will take. And there's a perfect example. If she had the principal taken my class, she would have known how to find her light.
You're a high school principal. Enjoy the spotlight while you've got it.
Revel in it. Maybe she doesn't want the spotlight. I mean, she was very nervous.
She was
this
very nervous.
This was year two.
Year two.
And you could almost hear the sweat
the shake
drip off her hands and slap the stage.
Yeah.
She was very nervous.
The principal of any school, whether it's middle, elementary, or high school, has to be used to public speaking. It's just part of the job.
Yeah, you got to be able to get up there and rock and roll.
Meet and greet, schmooze a little bit. Like the ones that I have known are also lovers of the limelight, like I think I would be. Mm-hmm. Like they get up there, they're smiling, they're moving around. And this woman was like cowering, shaking voice. She seems to be a great principal from all accounts, but definitely not
not a performer. I got to give a shout out to our principal at East, Tarita Walker. She's a performer. She's going to be in the musical.
I bet she's
this
good.
She's a singer, dancer. She gets up there, tells jokes, former Broncos dancer. She's got it all.
Does she?
She loves getting up there.
I can't wait to see her in the musical.
She does not have any problem. Yeah, she's playing.
Good for her.
The Queen Latifah.
Of course she's
part
not with that background.
Yeah, exactly. No, she's a natural.
Andrew, how have you been though? I know you're in Maryland now.
No, I'm in Maryland burning the candle at both ends, you know, so it's a good change. Everything's going well here, but there's always more work than there is time.
You haven't locked yourself in anywhere on accident?
I have not. I'm pretty careful.
That's good.
About that, there's like one place in the courthouse where I put like this 50-year-old stapler they have that weighs like 10 pounds, no exaggeration, to kind of prop the door open.
Yeah.
You know, and I figure the only reason that stapler is there is to prop the
door
open.
Yeah,
it's a prop.
You know, I stay out of the jail cells because getting locked in there overnight.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to end up in there.
No, stay out of those.
It's not fun. I mean, there is facilities in the jail cell, but, you know, they're not comfortable. They're not comfortable facilities.
Do you have keys to those cells?
So I don't. So I don't have keys to all the spaces, right? And part of it is if you accidentally get locked into the jail cell, it's not meant to be open from the inside.
No.
No, it's not. Yeah.
So, were
any of the jail cells occupado?
So, during the day there are,
okay,
right? Like when the court, and what you'll see is there's an area, designated area, where the prison transport vans have to park.
Oh, right, yeah.
They come in for their court date.
Yeah, and you know, for me, I don't know if it's, I don't want to be guilty by association, but like I try and stay as far away from the convicted criminals as possible.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, speaking of plenty of light, our next guest offered plenty of light to the program, A.M. Holmes. Now, this is a book, her new book is called The Unfolding. This is a book about a man who is called simply the big guy. And this guy, immediately following the election of Barack Obama, cannot comprehend what is happening to his country. And so he goes out and assembles a team of white men to figure out how to turn the country around and make it as great as it once was. Now, the thing about the big guy...
Dave, it sounds so familiar.
It does sound familiar, but it's not... And I know you're thinking this is just another Trump ripoff, but it's not, because this guy is a lot more interesting than Trump. And the thing about the big guy and his cronies, they're not just cartoon bad guys. They're interesting. They're unique characters. They're often being placed in quite funny and unusual situations for some great set pieces, which is not something you would expect out of this crew. At the same time, his wife is drinking herself to death, and his 18-year-old daughter is quickly becoming disillusioned with everything that is going on around her. This is a darkly funny satirical novel that I really enjoyed, almost as much as I enjoyed our chat with A.M. Holmes. Such a great guest. Let's take a listen here to talk about her new book, The Unfolding, and the aforementioned Penis Nuts. This is A.M. Holmes. We'll keep on turning. Primary, keep on burning. And we're rolling. Rolling. Rolling, yeah. Rolling. Rolling on a river. On the river. Listen, Music for Torching is one of my all-time favorite books. It's literally like in my top 10 all-time favorite. And I've read probably over 20 books. So that's, you know, that's saying. No.
Well, that put the fire out. No, I was kidding.
Yeah. I love that book so much. And just wanted to let you know it's one of my all-time favorites.
I appreciate that enormously. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyway, where are we talking?
Where are you sitting right now?
Yeah.
So I am in Denver, Colorado, in my lovely theater classroom here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a high school theater.
That's fantastic.
I know. I'm in Littleton, Colorado, and I'm in.
Oh my God, fantastic.
Yeah.
And you're in New York?
I'm in New York City right now.
Awesome.
Yes. The crack capital of
Yeah. Is it really
on Washington Square? Yeah.
Oh, Washington Square.
It's so bad right now.
Oh.
It's like, yeah, the crackheads use the awning light from my building to, like, you know, it's like, oh, we can see here. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I think I have to leave.
That's too bad.
It got really bad during the pandemic, and somehow the police have just abdicated. So it's like, literally, I'm walking the dog and I'm like, don't step on that. Like, you know, dogs really are not, like, you know.
Yeah. It's like you're in the free zone and from season 3 of The Wire, you know, you're in Hamster.
Totally. Literally, I was in DC yesterday and I got back and then I took the dogs out. And there's one on one corner, there's some like barfing person. And then on the other across the street, there's a guy who's got a pair of pants on, which sometimes is even a lot. But he's both washing his body and cleaning wounds. Like, just, you know, and I'm like, okay, like, right, you know, just like, and I'm home.
I'm ready.
I'm all that to say, I'm ready to come and join you there in Colorado. It seems
come on out. We made the journey ourselves. We were in Brooklyn and moved
totally
here. So
there's plenty
of room out here. You can join.
I know. I was in Brooklyn last night. And I thought, no, I can't even do Brooklyn. Too many people, too everything. I gotta get to a tree.
Oh yeah. I know what you mean. That's why we left too. Actually.
Yeah. Exactly why we left. Yep.
Yeah. Mountains.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Yep. Yeah. Anyway, A.M. Holmes, thanks for joining us. We loved your book, The Unfolding. Now, this is a tale of golf, good old boys, boozy marshmallows, and termite jokes. What was it that, and there were some good ones in there. I mean, you really were burning the midnight oil coming up with. I never read a book with like a string of termite books in it, termite jokes in it. And I was quite pleased. What was it that inspired you to tackle this subject?
You know, I'm just looking at the world we're living in. I'm really a stupid thing. Yeah. And, you know, that combination of sort of shock, awe, horror, and thinking, how do I kind of begin to document it and chronicle it and I don't know, capture some piece of it and ultimately, you know, create something that gives us something to talk about and figure out where we go from here. Yeah.
Try to process it.
There's a lot, and that's the thing, there's a lot to process, and it's like so much of what reality has become, especially in the political scene, it is like a novel. So it's like how many times have we said to ourselves, you can't make this shit up?
I tried, and then every time I tried it, I thought, oh, this is going really far out there. Then something would happen, I thought, nope, not far enough.
No.
But then the question becomes, where is the edge? And for a fiction writer, and especially someone who is like a catastrophic thinker fiction writer, it's really upsetting when the edge gets further and further and you're like, wait, you know, I don't want to go there. So reality has really intruded on fiction.
It has.
Is it? yeah
it has. I used to like dystopian stuff, and it's like, no, it's what we're living in, it feels like.
Right.
It really does not. I mean, I don't even mean that in a funny way. It's like, oh, no,
I know
where we are now. Yeah.
It used to be an escape, and it used to be like, oh, this is what I will go to in a way for a kind of comfort and to sort of lose myself.
Yes.
And now it's like, no, it feels that way. Plus, it feels not safe to leave and lose oneself because God knows what you're going to come back to.
Yeah. That's true. That is true. You feel like you got to keep an eye on things. Like
totally. I always tell people I'm just rubbernecking America right now. Like, wait, what? You know, I can't even write fast enough. I'm just like, you know. Oh,
that's true. That's
rubbernecking America. I like that.
Oh,
I like
that. Now, are you teaching still at Princeton?
Yes, I am on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Wow.
You can catch her at Princeton University room.
Yes, I'm teaching actually this semester. I'm teaching writing political fiction, which I'm terrified by, and then advanced writing class.
Wow! Wow!
Do you make your book required reading? I'd be like, no, I guess you can't. Can you? Yeah.
Just
flip it. I try to pretend I don't have a writing life.
Exactly. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
It's really funny. Yeah, I feel like you could slip it right in there with the American or one of those Philip Roth books.
Yes.
Well, listen, this book, The Unfolding, starts off with a great scene where young Megan, the big guy's daughter, she gets the vote for her very first time. It's funny how she goes in there and she's like she thinks it's like so low rent, just, you know, some marks on a piece of paper. And I remember my first time voting vividly and how excited I was to kind of take part in the process. Do you remember your first time as well?
You know, it's so funny that you asked me. I thought, no, I don't. Actually, it's really weird. No.
Really?
Wait, that's worrisome. Oops.
No.
See, I'm such a good fiction writer. I just make it up. No, that's funny. I don't remember my first time voting. I do have two voting related memories.
Oh, please.
One is that for me, I very much wanted this scene of her, Megan, going to vote to sort of echo Shirley Jackson's The Lottery, the tone of that.
Oh, yes.
And the idea that there's something kind of menacing, but you don't really know what it is. And so that for me was specific to that section, really interesting and fun.
I felt that.
Yeah. And then I do remember my mom always worked at the elections, and I remember always sitting at the table where you checked in people and the donuts, and there were always donuts. And so that's, I didn't have the donut moment as written in the book, but I did actually, I believe it was early on 1968, I had a Krispy Kreme orange cruller, but I've never matched since. And it was amazing. And so really the whole book is about the search for that original Krispy Kreme cruller.
In a nutshell.
I've never told anyone else.
That's hilarious. That's funny because all my voting memories are food related as well. Because we used to
really?
Vote. Yeah. And even before I started voting, my parents would vote at the middle school on Ken Island, Maryland. And across the street, there was a volunteer fire department, and they would put together a dinner. And it was like a big styrofoam container. And I remember the corn fritters. So good. Wow. So I think for me, it's the search for that, right, for that corn fritter. That's good.
Yeah. Corn fritter.
Laura, do you have a vote?
Yeah, I do. I got to vote. I voted for Bill Clinton, was the first president I could vote for. And I was a writer in the school paper, and I wrote about how disappointed I was. I wanted like a sound, a big,
like the levers. Yeah.
Like a lever. I wanted something exciting, and it was so boring. And now in Colorado, we've been voting by mail for years.
Yeah.
So it's also a little like you don't get that little jazzed up. Like,
and I miss that community.
Yeah, you're like, first you write a check, Colorado Power and Electric, you know, $39. And then you're like, oh,
I win $39. I wish.
Well, this is back in time when she voted for the first time. Now it's like $453. And you're like, wait, what?
Wait a second.
Wait, that's just a tank of gas. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I know. So this book is a beautiful cover.
And oh, the cover.
All of your
you could almost covers. Eat it, right?
Yes. I know. And all of your book covers, they're very eye-catching.
They're right. I was going to say they have a lot of food on them.
They're simple. And I think simplicity is hard to do. I don't know. Do you realize how lucky you are with your book covers? Because this is like a grabber for me.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think we all work really hard on it. There's a cover. I'll show you.
Oh, please. We do love show and tell on this show.
See that the cake cover was meant to model after a little bit this one, which is what we call this is the cranberry sauce cover. But no, it's also a funny thing because no one really was like, what is that on the cover of your book?
They didn't know, really?
People didn't know. And then in England, they were like, what is that? And then like tinned cranberry sauce. Yeah, but it is interesting because as a side note, publishing has become so... has a very heavy presence online, and they were like, you have to have a cover that can be recognizable as a little tiny thing. So I wanted a cover that was both sort of political but also American. And you know, I love cake.
Yeah, and also like, you know, the broken plate. I love that.
Totally.
Yeah. It says it all.
Exactly. Yeah. So you don't even have to read the book. I mean, it's amazing.
No, it's done. You can just keep it out on your coffee table and
totally,
you
know, show people. And it's also got a little bit of a stain resistant top. It's what they call it, laminated. So I think you can put your coffee on it without eventually get a ring. But I like the way that looks.
Yeah. Already done that. No, I'm just kidding.
Coaster books, we call them. Coaster books.
That's hilarious. But speaking of sugar of food, I mean, you got this great character in this book. He's kind of like a
type character. He I think he makes his own candy, but one of the
things, and he was making those delicious marshmallows you were talking about, and there's a reference to the atomic fireball, which is my favorite candy. But I had to know, I have to ask you, do you have a favorite? It seems like you have a real sweet tooth. You know, you came right out of the gate with the orange color story.
Right.
What's your go-to candy?
I like the fireball a lot. I think the fireball is a very sobering candy. I use it while driving home from school so that I don't fall asleep. I also like, only as an older person, do I like that weird sort of peppermint pillow, not the Starlight mint peppermint, but the kind of inflated one that is, it's in your mouth, that sort of deflates.
Yeah.
But I don't really, at this point, I don't eat a lot of candy. But the candy in the book, it's funny to say, it's all real and true. Chicago was a big candy town. And so Metzger, the guy who's in Chicago, is a Chicago ad man. That's all based on real things.
Really?
Yeah. Totally. I want to say, I think the fireball might have come from Chicago. I think the lemon head was a Chicago candy. And there's all this weird regional candy. And you all remember the Frango mint, right? The Frango mint was Marshall Fields.
No, you lost us with Frango.
I know. It's funny to say, I super love history in general. But I really also, with all of this stuff, I really like to make sure that as much as it's fiction, there is an incredible specificity of detail that is based on fact.
Oh, that's cool. That's really awesome. Cool.
The fireballs are great for driving. They're great. If you get a little, drowsy coming home in the afternoon, just pop one in and it'll.
But you also worry about choking on a fireball. I'm like, I'm driving and then what if there's a red light? I'm like, oh, what did she die of? Well, there was a fireball launched in the
I know. I had a bite of an apple the other day and I thought I was going to have to pull over and I don't know.
Exactly. I'm like on your trunk.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's that lady doing? It looks like she's Heimlicking herself.
I'm not sure what she's doing. Just keep driving, honey.
Right. I hate when that happens.
So there's also a great Joan Didion quote in your book about people who keep private notebooks are anxious malcontents. Do you keep a private notebook? I'm assuming you do.
I'm going to be very honest with you in a way that I'm not normally honest with people because I just lie all the time. I don't really keep a private notebook. I used to. And again, the question is a notebook the same as like a journal, right? So I don't know. Right. But I used to keep a journal, but I had to stop because this is how my journal went every day. I'm freaking out. I'm really freaking out. Today, I am totally freaking out. I was like, oh my God, you cannot. For 50 years, you cannot write that same thing every single day. Oh. It was just like a panic book. So I don't have a private notebook. I have more like things that say like milk, butter, eggs, sugar, call the exterminator.
Oh, that's really funny. So when you have the idea germinating for a story, do you just think about it for a while or do you start writing notes?
I write in my notebook.
This idea sucks. This is horrible.
Notebook. Right. Yeah. That's not a private note. I take lots of notes. I write things down all the time because some of it, when you're thinking about characters or even candy or whatever it might be, doesn't occur to you necessarily in the order you're going to use it. So because you have the beauty of us being on Zoom, see those binders back there?
Oh, yeah.
Those are binders full of ideas. No, those, so I'll have tons and tons of pages of notes for things.
Wow.
And then at some point I put them in binders and make notes on top of the notes and, all the stuff nutty people do.
That's fun.
Yeah. And then over there in the other corner,
I do see the piles
of paper. There's a lot of paper involved. I'm very invested in trees and I probably could try to reforest something.
That's really funny. And I see different colored paper too.
Not really. Only when I'm at school, sometimes they have different colored paper and I'll take a few pieces of that, but that would really be a much more organized and advanced system than I have.
Yeah. I was thinking that maybe you had that the blue paper is this idea.
No, that's just a folder, I think.
Speaking of nuts and being nutty, I did slap my knee at the idea of the penis nuts that you mentioned in this book.
That's come up a lot lately. Exactly.
The communal bowls of nuts that are said. I never thought about that, but I'm never going to eat out of those bowls of nuts.
No, everyone has said to me, I'm never eating the penis nuts.
No, you ruined nuts for everybody.
That's why you got to just go for the crudité because it's like single item.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I know. Sorry. Exactly. I don't even know who told me that because it came from somewhere, but I don't remember where it came from.
It's a good one.
I worked as a secretary in college, and I can tell you, you do not want, if there is a bowl or a dish of something, every man that goes to the men's room will come back, grab what they saw, and then move on. And you're like, okay, don't ever eat that.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Now, I love how in the book you call your main character the big guy, and he's never mentioned by name, only by last name. Now, what was what was your thinking behind that?
Well, I think that the big guy is, on the one hand, somebody we all know, and there are different iterations of the big guy. So it's also why I don't specifically say how wealthy or not he is, even though he's quite wealthy.
Right.
Because I think there are just there are people who occupy space in a certain way and they enter a room in a way that presumes they are welcome, that presumes they are in demand, that presumes they are bringing something to the party. And so I wanted him to be inhabited and envisioned by the reader as whatever their iteration of the big guy is. It's almost like if you just got like when you go to like a pancake house, you could just color in the big guy, he's on your placemat.
All right. I like that. You need a lot of orange, I think, if you're gonna do that. But now
the Clementine man.
The big guy in the book, he tells his wife that he thinks every person changes the world in some small way. When she says the number of people who change the world is very small. What side do you stand on?
Well, I like to believe that we all can change the world in some small way. And I also like to believe that our interactions with each other on a daily basis change us and then allow us to change the world. So if we have positive interactions, then we behave generously and more positively towards others. It's that old sort of metaphor of kick the dog. Like somebody yells at you, you yell at somebody, and then somebody goes and kicks the dog. So I want to think that we all can create change. And I also think that sometimes there are things, I've always said this, that we can do for each other that we can't do for ourselves. It's harder to do things for yourself, but you can certainly do a lot for other people. So when I feel really crappy, I always actually am like, what could I do for someone else today? And I weirdly get absurd amounts of pleasure from that. Like, it's almost like a weird, And the trick is that the more you can do anonymously for other people, even better, because then you're not a jerk. You're not like, you know,
you're not doing it for gratification.
Totally. Yeah. So I can't tell you what I've done. But if you look in your mailboxes this afternoon.
All right, I'm going to follow you into the drive-through lane at McDonald's and just expect to get the number three.
Totally. What do you just tell me what you want. I'll get it for you. I felt so. The other day, my kid wanted seltzer from McDonald's. I'm like, I don't even know if they sell seltzer. She goes, it's a special like off-the-menu thing. You just have to know to ask for
one
it.
One of those.
And then we drive through, and I'm like, could we have one seltzer? And then I go, and a cheeseburger, because I felt so bad for like not ordering more. And then she goes, Mom, it's McDonald's. You don't have to feel bad.
That's true.
Did you get the seltzer?
Yes. She loves this. They have very good seltzer. I don't know what really the qualities of good seltzer are, but apparently they have very good seltzer.
That's fascinating.
I used to work in I remember when I worked at a McDonald's, people would come in and order a grilled cheese. Did you know you could order a grilled cheese? I don't know if you still can. Yes. But what they'll do is, and what we would do, you would take the cheeseburger buns.
Totally.
You'd reverse them, stick two slices of American cheese in between them, stick it in the toaster, toast it, and it's a delicious grilled cheese sandwich.
Healthy,
there
too.
There you go. Vegetarian option.
A little vegetarian option.
Totally, I'm going to try that again next time. Seltzer and a grilled cheese, please. I know that there are things that are just not on the menu. Like the In-N-Out burger. You're like, I want like seven burgers only wrapped in lettuce. It's a thing.
Is it really?
Yes.
Do they
So if you Google In-N-Out burger like secret menu, there's a whole list of things, and it's called like animal style or protein thing or whatever. There's all these things you can order. And my kid insists that McDonald's has a similar secret menu. And I'm not sure. It's like, this is like the true deep state conversation.
This is
why we have you on the show.
Maybe Krispy Kreme has that crawler somewhere that I just am not ordering the right thing.
Oh man, Krispy Kreme.
Flecks of orange in it.
Yeah, that hot symbol on.
Oh yeah,
that's good. We don't have Krispy. Do we have? I don't think we have Krispy Kreme out here, which is
sad. I'll send you some.
Yeah,
no, please do.
It
please.
Used to only be in the South, and now they have it. Now they have it up north here.
Across the line. There's a lot of racial undertones in this book. The big guy admits he's scared of old white men becoming obsolete. God forbid. We have so much divisiveness right now. I don't need to tell you in America. Honestly, to me, it seems like most of it's racially driven or a fear of the other. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that is kind of the underlying force in our country right now?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and part of the reason that I picked specifically the 2008 election, because if you, in the book, it does refer back to the other election. You know, where Al Gore, I went to bed thinking Al Gore was the president. Right. And I woke up and all of a sudden it was George Bush. And there's this guy named Hanging Chad, you know, in Florida, who was like, I don't know, making decisions on his own.
Yes.
But I feel like the election of Obama, on the one hand, for many people, was an incredible moment of great hope and possibility and the idea that we could live in a world where diversity and difference was celebrated and tolerated and encouraged, and people were able to achieve wonderful things. And then at the same moment, that seemed to terrify a lot of people. And people didn't want to give up, or they perceived it as having to give up. And I'm not sure it would require giving anything up, but they did not want to certainly share power, share what they had. And I feel like it really unleashed, what was already under the surface always, but profound racism and sexism in this country. And I look at where we are now with Roe and sort of the clawing back of civil rights.
Yeah.
as part of that problem that spun out starting then.
Wow. Yeah, the sexism, I just saw the article on Andrew Tate, I think in the Washington Post yesterday, and just it's a little terrifying, actually. Yeah. As the parent of a daughter.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so it's interesting too, because it's funny to say, like, even as I mean, I'm a woman, but mm-hmm. I never really thought about it that much until all of a sudden I had a daughter.
Yes.
And then my kid came home from school, you know, in like third grade and said, "Mom, were there any women in history?" And I was like, "What?" And, you know, this is like at a progressive, loosey-goosey school. And I was like, wow, that's so interesting that the way history is presented is still in no way inclusive. And we live in a world where there are histories, but they're still divided so that if you want to study women's history, you have to take a separate course, and it's really only taken by women. And if you want to study Black history, you take a separate course, and it's really only taken by people of color. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's wacky. And that's right now. I mean, that's not, you know, old. And so all of that concerns me very, very much. And the real question is, you know, now we are at such an incredible point of fracture and fear, and all of these things that happen, and what the guys in the book are talking about, are about sowing dissent and sowing that kind of fracture. And then everybody pulls back and becomes much more tribal and just like mine, holds on to what they have. And that fear of the other, I just think, is growing and growing. And the real question is, what about the other within?
Good.
Yeah.
Right. And well, what happens when the big guy realizes that maybe he's not entirely who we thought he was? And what if, I mean, he looks at it and thinks, what if I'm sort of a jerk? But that jerk part of him could be the other within, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And you have to reconcile with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is terrifying right now, what's going on. And your book really, it's interesting with the Obama, where it did make that turn, and you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You know, A.M. Holmes, it's time now for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions, or you can take your time with them if you want, in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
The Bear.
Oh, yeah.
So good. So much better than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah.
Incredible characters, compelling, really fun.
Really. And those kitchen scenes were just something else. So good. Yeah.
I love that actor. Fictional world or place would you like to visit? Or if you'd like to go back in time, and we'll let you back in.
That's funny. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure.
We're givers here on the Inside.
The question is, it's funny. Do I go with my depressive nature, or do I go with something a little bit more upscale?
Leave the notebooks at home. Leave the notebooks at home.
I know, right? A fictional world that I'd like to visit. I'm too scared to go to like Alice in Wonderland.
That'd be a rough one. Yeah.
What's a pleasant book in a castle somewhere? I'll take. I don't know what that would be. I don't like Jane Austen either. I'm like, I can't go.
And certainly not the Shirley Jackson. We always lived in the castle. You don't.
No,
want to go
I'm
there,
not going to Shirley's house. I've been there. I don't want to go there again. I'm looking around to see what's in here. Where would I go? That's such a hard question. I don't even want to go to John Cheever's house. I already know what they're having for dinner. I don't eat meat. And really it's too depressing.
It'd be disagreeable with it.
You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to go with Jack Kerouac. And we're going to go for a ride on a motorcycle and just air our heads out a little bit.
That is the best answer we've ever gotten.
Gosh, that is the best answer we've ever gotten.
That's a good one.
I'm going to hit the road.
we may just have to retire that question after that answer.
It's done been answered properly. Thank you.
Yeah.
How about this? Here's a little bit of an easier one, a little softball we'll lob to you. What is one of your top five favorite movies of all time?
Oh, top five favorite movie? Shoot the Moon.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Ooh, so
good.
Yeah, who is that?
It's Alan, I want to say Alan Parker made it. It's about a writer. What's his name? Plays the writer. You know, what's his name?
Hold on, I'm looking
Albert
it up.
Finney. Who else is in it? Is Diane Keaton in it? Somebody wonderful is in it.
Wait, I accidentally typed in Shoot the Man.
It's such a good movie.
Oh, yeah, Alan Park. Okay, well, I'm seeing some things you're seeing. Yeah, Diane Keaton.
Oh, Albert. Karen Allen. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah.
Written
by
Bo Goldman.
Such a good movie.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And what's the guy who has the really beautiful blue eyes? He was in RoboCop.
Peter Weller.
Yeah, Peter Weller, who's so good in it. Yes. But Albert Finney as the writer, to me, is just amazing.
Oh.
And Diane Keaton is the wife who suffers. Yeah.
All right. I know what we're watching tonight.
Yeah, I do too. How about a top five favorite book?
Top five favorite book? You know, I really love the writer Maria Popova. And she's mostly known sort of as a blogger for Marginalia and Brain Pickings. But she wrote a book called Figurings that's so, it's all about science and art and love and the intersections of all of it. And she's just brilliant. So
that's a good
I'm going to pick that book.
I didn't actually know that she'd written a book. I get
her. Well, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
That's good.
Yeah.
How about this?
So good.
Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Proud Mary.
Yeah. Okay. Another good answer. Okay. Very good.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I am reading Death by Landscape, and I can't remember who wrote it, but it's really good.
All right, very good. Well, Am Holmes, we loved your book, The Unfolding. Thanks so much for spending time. This has been a lot of fun. Really appreciate it.
I know, really a treat to hang out with you.
Yeah, I need to go get an orange crawler
now.
Breakfast
now. Oh, good. If there's any donuts in my house.
That's right. There you go. Or at least chuck
more
a fireball.
Like a grand cereal. Okay, perfect.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you.
Right, bye.
Bye-bye. The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Thank you so much to A.M. Holmes. What a fun guest. Yes, mm-hmm. Andrew.
So penis nuts, do you scratch them? Do you eat them? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, I had to listen to the interview, won't you?
Okay.
That's right. All right, let's get to it. And check out our new book also, by the way. It is called The Unfolding. Now let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Where we are, I don't know where we are, but it will be.
I got a little lost listening to the Lumineers. Sorry.
Yeah, you did.
Oh,
didn't you?
Really funny. Oh, I have a music recommendation. I don't usually recommend music on
podcast. But that's all right. We'll
breaking
take it.
News.
We get it. Yeah.
So I have fallen in love with S. Oh, what was that?
Sorry, that was that's breaking news. Whenever it feels like breaking.
Oh. Ouch! I gotcha.
A little loud.
That's all right.
A little loud. A little hot.
So it's a indie country singer, and her name is S. G. It's like one of Andrew's science fiction writers. Mm-hmm. S. G. Goodman.
Well, we did just talk to A. G. Riddle.
There you go.
Could be a
Oh, and A. M. Holmes, who's not
A. M. Holmes.
Oh my gosh! So this is S. G. Goodman.
Okay.
And her album called Old Time Feeling is awesome.
Getting a heavy rotation on the
heavy rotation. There was at one point last week where that was all that I listened to was that album. And then there's a couple songs that I really, really like on the album. And because I have some obsessiveness to my nature, I just listened to this
surprising.
Same song over and over again. So anyway, I just want to highly recommend that.
Okay.
So my book today is called Tomb of the Queen by Joss Walker. This is cheesy goodness, Dave and Andrew. It's fantasy fiction.
Oh.
The subtitle of this book is Jane Thorne, CIA Librarian.
Okay.
So,
sounds
Tomb of the Queen, Jane Thorne, CIA Librarian. And this is a book. It's book one in the series. So if I wasn't an interior designer, I get asked this every once in a while. Like, what would you do? And usually I think I have absolutely no life skills. I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
But I think I would be a librarian.
Really?
I think I could do that.
I think
that's something I could do, and I actually might enjoy it.
Maybe we can talk to Amy Del Poe about getting you a little internship at the library.
I don't want to get they got to get that degree. It's a science degree.
Yeah, library. Yeah, it's called library science.
I know.
I believe.
That's the word science that is off-putting to my delicate nature.
That's true.
So I don't know if I could do that. But I think that that's what I would do.
Fair enough.
If I could. So
not a CIA librarian.
I'd love that. So
we could talk to Alma Katsu about that.
I'd love to be a CIA. Yeah. So Jane is a librarian.
All right, hold on. Yes, Andrew.
Oh.
So I may or may not have almost worked for the CIA.
Oh,
but let's just say,
on my bookshelf,
I have basically recommended reading for potential CIA candidates.
Wow.
And now I can tell you, those books are probably some of the driest, most boring books.
I bet.
You know, like intelligence and statecraft. Oof. I mean, you know, you need toothpicks to stay awake to read those things. So I don't know, from a practical standpoint, being a CIA librarian, I'm not sure that it's all that exciting.
That's a really good point. You know what? Scratch that. Never mind.
Never mind.
So Jane is a librarian. She's a librarian actually at a college university, Vanderbilt University, which I think is in Tennessee.
Okay.
And one day she's shelving an old book. She touches this book, right? And she gets transported to a weird realm. She gets out of this realm by, you know, not touching the book anymore. But she also isn't really sure what happened to her. She heard whispering. She heard stuff. She saw something different, like a golden thing. She was floating, odd stuff. So the next day at her job, the CIA contact her and she gets recruited into their magical division. So the CIA in this world, they have a magic division.
Oh.
And they move her to Trinity College in Dublin for some undercover work.
Dublin.
So Dublin. This is one of those books that, yes, it is in the fantasy genre, but it is also total nerdy fantasy girl fantasy.
All right.
So it's, if you get my drift. So I just kept looking up from this book all the time, huge smile on my face, telling Dave how happy I was that I was reading this book. So this quiet librarian has, of course, Andrew knows this. What does she have? She has extreme power. She has more power than has been seen in generations. So we see that a lot in fantasy novels. And her magic, of course, has woken up all sorts of other magical creatures.
Ooh.
And so at the heart of this book, there's a struggle between good magic, evil magic. So it's good and bad. There's some humor in the story. There's a little bit of romance. There's a little bit of Irish history. And there's a lot of magic. And really fun just taking this kind of, she's not really mousy, but this quiet librarian and turning her into just a kick-ass CIA undercover magician is awesome. And then after I read this, I found out that Joss Walker, the name of the author, is a pen name for thriller writer J.T. Allison,
We've had her on the show.
And I really love her thrillers. So it's no wonder I like this book.
No wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder why she wrote this one under her pen name.
It's pure fantasy. So if you're not a fantasy reader, you would probably not, this wouldn't be up your alley.
Yes, Andrew.
So I am a little confused here, Laura. You said she's...
It won't
she's
be the first time.
She's not mousy. Yeah. No.
But she's quiet. Mm-hmm. I mean... Please,
I'll tell you
the
difference.
Oh,
thank you so much, Andrew. I'm so glad you asked. So mousy to me is someone who's like shy and retiring. She is shy and retiring a little bit. Like she loves to eat pies and cakes and have tea and read her books, but she works out and she does kickboxing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, mousy people don't do that.
I don't feel like mousy people kickbox. So she can fight.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. And that book is recommended by... All right, my recommendation this week.
Dave Medicus, this is why we can't have nice things.
Oh, speaking of Taylor Swift.
Oh, Andrew, there is a new album of Taylor Swift's that drops, I believe, October 21st. And our house is a tither.
Yes, indeed. Andrew, are you?
No, but I wonder if Mary-Kate will start to get into that stuff.
I feel like maybe not quite yet, but probably right around third grade.
Yeah, third grade.
I think
fourth
you got
grade.
One more year for that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. My book this week is called The Couple at Number 9. And this is written by Claire Douglas. This is a mystery / thriller set in England. And it starts out with every homeowner's worst nightmare. And something certainly that Andrew over here doesn't want to happen as they get ready to break ground on a new construction on a house.
Congratulations.
I'm surprised you didn't mention that, Andrew. That's breaking news.
You know, so basically on September 11th, we went under contract on a new home.
I thought you were going to say you went undercover.
Nope, we went under contract. We were fortunate enough to get you know, Probbywood is one of the nicest lots in a 2,000 house subdivision.
Wow, that's great.
All right.
It's a big subdivision.
Yep. And so we get a lot that has a really nice western view, so we can sit off of our deck and enjoy sunsets and, you know, nice mountain view. The one thing is, I did not want to have a house where you spend a small fortune only to look at 200 or 300 other people looking back at you from their back porches.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so, you know, it worked out. Now it's, we just have to wait 11 months or whatever for them to actually build this thing.
Yeah, it takes a long time to build a house.
Well, let me ask you this, Andrew. If during those 11 months, what would you do if, as they were excavating the site, they unearthed two bodies? Whoa. Human, I should point out, over 30 years old.
I really have no idea. I mean, obviously, I would be disconcerted.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's that? What's the movie where, you know, don't go into the light? What is that movie?
Oh, Poltergeist.
Poltergeist.
Yeah.
I'd be thinking about Poltergeist.
Oh, you'd be thinking about ghosts haunting your house, huh?
Yeah. They were violently killed on that ground, Dave.
Okay, good point.
The souls are not rested.
Well, this is what happens at the beginning of this book. It is an old house, and Safi and her boyfriend, Tom, have just moved in. But, you know, they're doing some renovations, as Safi has inherited the house from her grandmother, who's living in a nursing home. Now, because her grandmother was living in the house 30 years ago, of course, the police want to have a little chat with her about these bodies. The only problem is that Grandma Rose's memory is not what it used to be, and she cannot help the police as much as they want her to. Luckily for us, however, the author knew what happened 30 years ago, and the narrative shifts back in time, back to when Grandma Rose was living in the house, and she takes in, of course she wasn't a grandma back then, she takes in a strange tenant named Daphne. From there, the narrative flips back and forth in time as we're slowly led into the secrets of the past, as well as how things are going in the present, as Safi reaches out to her estranged mother for answers. Now, her mother is too busy spending time in Spain with her much younger boyfriend to help too much, but she does agree to come back to England to help out with the investigation. The mystery is a fantastic one. I found myself just trying to figure out exactly what the secret was. Here's a spoiler alert. I couldn't figure it out, and when it was revealed to me, this was one of the great mic drop moments in a long time. This is a really good reveal, a great reveal. There are multiple POVs from the three different generations of women featured here. I found both timelines equally riveting. The narrative sucks you in along as the mystery deepens. It's one of those books that, you know, the more you read, the more addicting the book gets and the harder it becomes to put down. Damn hard to put down. It's so, so good. Love this one a lot. Check it out. This is called The Couple at Number 9 by Claire Douglas. And Andrew, watch out for those bodies as you guys start to excavate. Oh,
hey, Andrew, how much of that neighborhood is developed? Is it like a third, a quarter?
I think about 30 to 40%.
Oh, so quite a bit, really.
Yep.
That's cool. So, now, are there any trees down there or not yet? I feel like Castle Pines doesn't really have many trees.
Yeah, I don't see many trees in the neighborhood for sure.
Yeah. Is there a golf course in that neighborhood?
There's not. There's pretty much everything else, but there is no golf course. I mean,
what are you going to do? Just kidding.
You know, part of it is for us is we figure now's the time to transition. And I probably spend $4,000 to $6,000 a year watering my lawn.
Yeah. Remember that time when you first moved in your house and ripped up a bunch of bushes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in any case,
put it in grass.
Yeah.
Well,
okay. Moving on.
but in any case, we're building a house that doesn't need watering really outside.
That's great.
We're going to be doing dryscapes. We're going to do artificial grass in the back. But, you know, I mean, when you just hear about all these droughts and everything.
Oh, no, we shouldn't. We should be responsible. Yeah.
Yeah. So the house we're moving into is a more environmentally friendly house. It will need a lot less maintenance outside.
That's great.
So it just seems to make sense. Right.
And each kid will have a bedroom probably, right?
Each kid has his own bedroom with their own ensuite bathroom.
Ooh, fancy.
You might want to think about, you got two dogs. You might want to rethink that throwing down artificial grass in the back, FYI.
No. Well, there's special artificial grass specifically for pets.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, and I could explain the difference. I've actually done some research already.
Right. Well, part of it's how they prepare the ground. It is still tough, but whatever. It doesn't matter. It's nice to have. You can always redo it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my book this week.
Yes,
is called,
and that voice you hear is
Andrew Dowd.
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ, blow my speakers up tonight. I'm a fight.
All right, there you go.
So this book is part of a trilogy. It is called, the first book is called The Coordinate by Mark Jacobs.
Oh, and the designer? No, it's Mark. What's that?
It is Mark Jacobs, I think.
Not that Mark Jacobs. And so there's three books in the trilogy. The second book is called The Hidden Coordinate. And then the third book, of course, is called The Final Coordinate. And basically the book is kind of a mixture of Dan Brown meets Isaac Asimov.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
Yep. And it starts out with I would say it's kind of like a youth coming of age science fiction, because instead of like old disgruntled people like a Dan Brown book, these are two high school students, Logan and Emma, who basically, and the book starts off that they're assigned a class project, and the two of them were good friends back in like elementary and middle school. They've gone their separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
But now this class project is a chance for them to kind of reunite.
Okay.
And so they just start pulling the thread on this class project, which is to investigate a South American archaeological site.
Oh,
where,
I'm loving this book already, Andrew. Yeah. Sold.
Where all these all these numbers and stuff were, yeah, like tens of thousands of numbers were uncovered.
Oh, that's cool.
And so then they basically go to the website to look for information to do their school report. And what do they discover? That all those websites have been scrubbed.
Mm. Oh,
right.
Oh, boy.
And so then they follow the lead and they're like, well, maybe the company that hosted these websites has an archive. So then they make a little trip by train. And of course, you know, they actually, you know, do find that some of that information has been archived. And so they, you know, the two of them are brilliant high school students, right? That's one thing that comes out in the book, is neither one of them is average. They are just absolutely brilliant, and they make an absolutely stellar team.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that might be a little bit of a,
I get you,
a hint,
wink wink,
little
nudge,
bit of
nudge,
hint in this book. And I don't want to give too much away. This book is fast paced.
Sounds good, Andrew.
I mean, it takes you on a journey. It will take you to the Vatican. It may take you to the far reaches of the galaxy.
It does have a little Dan Brown in it. Yeah.
Yep. There may be some aliens. No, there's definitely some aliens in this book.
Okay, sure.
Of course, there are ancient mysteries.
Yeah.
And I, of course, and in good fashion, have already read all three books.
That's right.
That's awesome.
As far as that goes. So, but, you know, it's just a great, fun series. I could easily see this being made into a movie, especially the first book.
I can see that.
But the book is called The Coordinate by Mark Jacobs.
That sounds really good.
All right. Awesome. And that is recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
All right. And that'll do it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks to AM Holmes, the great AM Holmes, for joining us. And what else? Oh, check out our book. It's called The Unfolding. That was episode, by the way, I misspoke at the beginning.
How dare you?
That was actually episode 183, as I forgot to label the AG original episode. We'll fix that. All right. See you next time.
Adios.
Excelsior.
I'm freaking out. I'm really freaking out. I am totally freaking out.